And so we are beginning our Lenten journey, the first Sunday of Lent, and in the year of Mark. Mark's version of Jesus' temptation, as it's known, is different than Matthew and Luke's. We're in the first chapter, right at the beginning of Mark's Gospel. He was just baptized by John, and the Spirit descended upon him, and the Spirit said, "My favour rests with my beloved. He has done things well." So the Spirit is there, and the very next thing that happens is he's led out into the desert. We don't know how he's tempted according to Mark, and we certainly don't get any sense from Mark that Jesus fasted. I do like the one from Matthew where it says Jesus was led out into the desert for 40 days and 40 nights where he had no food or drink, and at the end of the 40 days he was very hungry. But in the year of Mark, Mark's emphasis is different. There are only two little paragraphs in today's gospel. The first is about the 40 days and the temptation, and the second is about the very beginning of Jesus' mission, which becomes, in those short two sentences, the whole focus of Mark's gospel. That's why it's right at the beginning. He's not so interested in all the bits and pieces leading up to the event. He's interested in the man himself, in Jesus, and making sure that people recognise who he is. And that's why he begins with the word gospel at the very beginning of his gospel, which means good news. And that word was used only by the Roman emperor originally to explain to people that the law that they were receiving from Rome, this was the good news. So Mark very cleverly gives to his audience the real good news and kind of puts the emperor's language in the back seat. And I say the back seat because it wasn't cut out, because Rome was ruling that part of the world at that time, so there was always that influence. So the 40 days, of course, that takes us right back to the 40 years that the people of Israel spent in the desert as they left Egypt. Moses going up Mount Sinai for 40 days. Elijah wanting to do the same thing for 40 days. So 40 is a significant number, and it is nearly always attached to the desert. And so it's obvious for Mark anyway, and for the other gospel writers, that Jesus being led out into the desert was going to be for 40 days, because it connects the old with the new. Now, we associate our Lent, as we understand it now, with the 40 days from today's gospel and going right back to the Israelites leaving Egypt. We connect all those 40s that I just mentioned. But we never had a Lenten period of 40 days until 325 AD. And interestingly enough, in a moment, our first communion candidates are going to lead us all, as they come up with the parish bulletin, and they're going to lead us in saying the creed. And it was in 325 AD at a place called Nicaea, which is in modern-day Turkey, that that creed, what it is we believe, was actually put together. In those days, the Eastern Church, as we know it, and the Western Church, there was one church. The separation of the East and West never happened until the 1100s. There was one church, and they brought together 21 canons or teachings of the church. The fifth canon of Nicaea, at the same time that the bishops wrote the creed that we say, the fifth canon refers to the 40 days of Lent. It's the first evidence we have that there is a period, a significant period. And so they connected it to our biblical understanding of 40. Prior to that, the week that the church had designated Sunday as the day of resurrection, and once a year they had designated Easter Sunday, and it was the days leading up to that that was Lent. But now the church was mature enough to allocate a specific period of time, and it's locked right into today's gospel. So in the English language, the word Lent comes from the same word where we get the word lengthen. And lengthen, by that I don't mean elastic lengthen, I mean the days are starting to get longer. The sun, it was thought, was making the days longer. Remember, in the Northern Hemisphere, they're coming out of the darkness of winter. And it's a beautiful marriage of the two suns. The sun making the days longer in their mind, and we have the Son of God making our life long for God our Creator. I quite like the way that there's an interplay very often in Scripture and in the practicalities of life between the Son and God's Son. They work together so beautifully, and Lent is the time, I think, where that is highlighted the clearest. The second part of the Gospel refers to what Jesus was preaching. Now, his first words there come as the backbone, as I said, of everything that he's going to do in Mark's gospel. He never did that or said that until he had gone through the temptation in the desert. The desert where the place of the spirit dead was believed to dwell. And in today's gospel, we're told that he was out there with the beasts, the wild beasts, and then the angels. It's also interesting in Mark's gospel that in the ministry life of Jesus, he begins his life by going into the desert and being tempted, and then his life ends by going out into Golgotha, which is outside of what was then Jerusalem, in a very desolate place. His life ends with another desert experience where he is once again tempted. You might recall in Mark's gospel, and you'll hear it on Good Friday, that it was the people who said, "If you're the Son of God, come down off the cross and save yourself." So once again, the desert and the temptation at the beginning and the end of his ministry. Those 3 years in between, in a sense, was Jesus' Lenten period. It was the lengthening. I'm really playing with the words a little bit there. But it was where he came to a greater understanding and a completely solid understanding of who he was and what his mission was. And his mission, I'll translate it rather than exactly what Mark says there, is that, as I look at it, is that he was and his message was from God. He was and his message was about God. And his message was and is to lead people to God. And that's Lent. From God, about God, and to God. That is what we need to contemplate in Lent. We can focus, if we wish, on the whole temptation thing. And we had a very interesting conversation with our Lenten group on Friday, yesterday, about habits and temptation. And there's a great saying which I have used in this church 3 years ago when Mark was on. It says, "We live the second half of our life according to the habits we acquired in the first half of our life." We live the second half of our life according to the habits we've acquired in the first half of our life. So some of you here who are young will be thinking, "Oh, that's interesting." And some of you here who are considering yourself in the second half of your life will be saying, "That's not interesting at all." And so Lent is the period for us, I suppose, to reassess what we consider to be bad habits in our life. And with temptation and habits, I think temptation is very often dressed up as something which is good, when in fact it leads to something which is not good. Temptation clothes itself in excitement and beauty. and grandeur and splendor. And the end result is the opposite, usually. And we say, we use language like, oh, this is the last time I'll do that, or this won't hurt, it's only a little thing, everybody else does it. That sort of language. And Lent is the time for us to cue into our makeup and work out and identify those signs that make us vulnerable. When we start using that language, when we're tired, we're angry, we're out of balance with our life, we're using too much alcohol, we're using drugs, we're doing everything to excess. When those balances get out, you can bet that the temptations seem so good, but the outcome is usually so bad. And quite often such temptations are married to habits. So my message for us all, I suppose, this Lent is, if we want to change the outer aspects of our minds, of our behaviour, if we want to change what's on the outside, well then firstly, change the attitude that's on the inside.